Here come the art fags.
Over the years, there has been many a filmmaker in possession of a sensational record collection. We've spoken to a few of them on the show, from Andrea Arnold and Richard Linklater to Nicholas Winding Refn and Danny Boyle. But just because you have impeccable taste doesn't mean you can translate that onto the screen. I'm Edith Bowman, and you're listening to Soundtracking, the podcast in which we hear from directors, writers, actors, composers about the music in their work, with excerpts from the tracks we discuss woven throughout the conversation. Thankfully, writer-director Mike Mills knows how to enhance a story with sound, as evidenced by his latest movie, 20th Century Women. Set in 1979, it tells the story of a mother who enlists her bohemian friends to help raise her son, and is part based on his own childhood. Music is central to both the development of narrative and character, with the artist featured all close to Mike's heart. Each selection is inspired by personal experience, from offerings by Susie and the Banshees through the Buzzcocks to Black Flag. Indeed, when it comes to Talking Heads, he even bought the t-shirt. Well, his sister did anyway. Mike Mills, welcome to Soundtracking.
Thanks.
Congratulations on this new film. Did music form part of the initial idea for you?
Yeah, definitely. That's part of why I picked 79, the year that it's set in. And the story is very personal. It's sort of a portrait of my mom, and the Greta Gerwig character is sort of a portrait of my sister, who did good in New York in the 70s and got turned on to that music, the sort of more arty New York version of punk, and sort of brought that home to me. Got me that Talking Head 77 t-shirt, you know, which I wore.
I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. I can't sleep 'cause my bed's on fire. Don't touch me, I'm a real live wire. Psycho killer, qu'est-ce que c'est? Fa 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 fa. Better run, 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 run away. Oh,
so all that is very personal, and music, for me personally, is sort of cloud that we call punk, and it's so easy to, punk has become a cliche, the word.
Yeah.
But it really was a revolution in music and emotional options, especially if you come from suburban America. It was like a whole other way of thinking that kind of saved me, or saved my emotional life. And I wanted to write about that in the film. So yeah, you're right, it's sort of like the fifth Beatle of my movie. And it's sort of like the plot of the film in some ways, in that punk is this thing that's happening to all these people and affecting them differently. Mm-hmm. And the mother's born in the 20s, grew up in the 30s and 40s, and her music is epitomized by like Rudy Valleys as time goes by.
This day and age we're living in gives cause for apprehension, with speed and new invention and things like third dimension. Yet we get a trifle weary with Mr. Einstein's theory. So we must get down to earth at times. Relax, relieve the tension. No matter what the progress or what may yet be proved, the simple facts of life are such they cannot be removed. You must remember this, a kiss is still a kiss, a sigh is just a sigh. The world will always welcome lovers as time goes by.
So as we were in the edit, we did kind of figure out that one way to understand the movie is it's as time goes by meets Why Can't I Touch It by the Buzzcocks, and all the problems that ensue from putting those two things together. And that's sort of my mom and me.
Well, it seems so real, I can't see it, and it
Music has this wonderful power where it almost acts as your companion, your friend, your confidant, and it's done so brilliantly. There's some wonderfully memorable scenes in the film as well. Annette Bening trying to interpret punk in her dance moves. When you start thinking about a scene like that, and I was reading lots of stuff in terms of your preparation with your actors for this particular film. How did that work with Annette, for example, with that particular scene when Harden, Billy's character, and he's kind of almost trying to encourage her to embrace it and feel it.
But he's outside himself. As a sort of counterculture hippie type. He's younger than her, but he doesn't have real access to Black Flag as she does. I mean, again, this comes from my life a bit. Like, I was into all that music. And my mom, she's born in 1925, but she has sort of a generous bohemian quality to her. Or I feel like people who grew up during the Depression in America have sort of like a socialist, anti-authoritarian open-mindedness to them. So she would try to take my music really seriously and try to understand, what is this Black Flag stuff you're listening to and what does it mean? And then she would listen to it as one might listen to Mozart, you know, and be disappointed or just sort of confused. I'm about to have a nervous breakdown. My head really hurts. If I don't find a way out of here, I'm gonna go to the bus. I'm crazy and I'm hurt. And so addressing that scene kind of wrote itself in my head. It just plopped out. And I think for her, similarly, she just got it and what it was all about. But we did, as part of the rehearsing, we did do a lot of dancing to different kinds of music. Everything from Black Flag to Glenn Miller, and had all my cast members dance as a way to energetically get to know each other and to just not be cerebral. And I do believe that music is magic and operates in an irrational, non-discursive way. So it's a part of how I enchanted everyone into being in 1979 and into being a family and into being different, contrasting parts of a family.
I love how your film starts. You have this wonderful piece of music that waves in and out of the film at different times. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a timeless piece. It's quite modern. Uh-huh. And then it comes up the date, 1979. And you work with Roger Neill again on this. What was your ask of him? What do you see it being used as within
the film? It was a very long journey to get to that music and the score that's in the film. I started out thinking I was going to have like very traditional score-sounding symphonic music, maybe string concertos or big strings, because my movie is very unusual and I'm trying to disrupt normal filmmaking. You know, I don't rely on plot a lot. I have all these disruptions in the film, these digressions. And I thought, oh, a really juicy romantic score or like strings kind of from Chelsea Girls would be a great way to hold it all together and kind of fool the audience in that you're watching a normal movie. And we tried that and it just didn't work. So I have Talking Heads in my film, I have DJ by Bowie, and I had an Eno song at one point, and I realized, man, Eno is really the connective tissue, and Eno is so crucial to 70s revolution in music. So that song is very, we're using all 79 synthesizers, so in a way it's very period.
Oh, wow.
It sounds very contemporary, but it's like Heroes a little bit. It's very Eno to me. And we're using the Selena, however you say it. We're using all those synths that they loved back then. It's the Bowie, Eno, Talking Heads connection, which is very thick in my movie, became the score. Thank you. it just sort of made more sense. I didn't know we were going to go there at all, but just after lots of trying things and not working, it was like, oh, this sort of ambient electronic music thing from that era, just for whatever reason, just like feels right.
Beautiful, beautiful piece of music.
Oh, good.
I love the authenticity you took with that, though, in terms of the materials that you used. Insisting on the specifics.
That was very fun. And then, you know, all the music came out in 79 or 78, 77. You know, so it's really like, if you turn on the radio then, if you're a hip punk person, you turn on the radio, it's all stuff that you could hear. Got the vinyl, play the vinyl through stereo system and recorded it that way. And it does sound really beautifully in the room.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, is music and film can be used in so many different ways. You know, you can use contemporary music in a place of score, but a lot of the music in this film is in the film. It's a band playing at a venue. It's one of your characters putting a record on a piece of vinyl. It's part, it's in the room, it's there.
Yeah, yeah. Like Greta Gerwig talks about the raincoats, Fairy Tale in the Supermarket, and she's sort of riffing off of that great Carol Marcus essay, Process of Punk. And Billy talking about Black Flag, what it means, what are the lyrics, and then putting on Talking Heads, which were called art fag music by a lot of hardcore kids at the time. So yeah, there's arguments and discussions of music and what it means all throughout the movie.
I see the shoreline, I see the white caps, a baseball.
There's lovely moments as well where you're reminded of the way that the narrative works in terms of the narrator sometimes when it pops up and tells you facts and things, and you have these popular culture things or news or historical moments flash up, whether it be, you know, there's an image of Louis Armstrong who pops up and things like that, and there's just such wonderful reference points. Are all those true to your experiences, or is there a bit of creative license in terms of what you imagine them being?
It's mostly very real, because I do believe that if you take the concrete objects from someone's life, it really does help give you insight into that person. So there's these kind of like little essay bios that to me are very sort of indebted to Godard, French New Wave, like the beginning of Tout va bien or something, where you just look at objects and they're part of the portrait of these people. And the film is essentially a bunch of portraits. So my mom did wear Birkenstocks, she did smoke Salem, she did carve that wood rabbit after reading Watership Down. You know, all those things are just very, very one-to-one. when she was dying, we played music, but we played Glenn Miller. And I switched it to Louis Armstrong to Basin Street Blues, which is just the most beautiful song ever. And it's the first song I played for my son when he came from the hospital, like when he was born. And we had sort of a wild, terrifying birth situation. So we got home from the NICU, and I just wanted to introduce him to music.
Yeah.
It's like, here's music.
Yeah.
And I played that song for him. So it's sort of like a little ode to my boy in that way.
Yes, Basin Street is a street where the folks, they all meet and do all these their line of dreams by the day but over. Yes, it's on the earliest bamboo. Oh, it's a tree swinging on Basin Street. Take it, Billy Kyle.
My husband made a mixtape for us.
Yeah.
My firstborn came out to Into My Arms by Nick Cave.
Oh, wow.
Which was pretty. So every time I hear that song, I bawl, start crying.
Yeah.
Because it's such an emotional connection.
Yeah.
But that's the thing with music, isn't it?
Well, it operates on your nervous system, right? And you can't quite control it. I use it a lot when I'm writing. I'll put a song on loop for like all day. I'll listen to just any song because like to some part of it. Robert Fripp guitar in Bowie's Heroes. This sort of like whale call sound very much fits the emotion of this movie to me.
I wish you could swim like dolphins can swim. Though nothing, nothing will keep us together. We can beat them forever and ever. Oh, we can be heroes just for one day.
Or like Moon Age Daydream. Something about the choruses in that song. It's like very nostalgic and kind of bittersweet. And at the same time, triumphant and hopeful and forward-moving, you know? And so that vibe or that opposite movement thing really influenced me.
I'm an alligator. I'm a mama, papa coming for you. I'm the space invader. I'll be a rock and rolling bitch for you. Keep your mouth shut.
Influenced your young cast as well and given them a really great kind of insight into a time of music that they may well have been familiar with, but if they're not now, they've got a great insight into it as well.
I'm not sure Luke is totally...
He ran from it or he embraced it?
I mean, Greta really loved it, and that's how Greta and me started talking about Abby. We started mapping out her music history.
Okay.
When she first heard what. And my sister got into punk via Bowie and like Roxy Music and Eno.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get into punk that way, it's a very different kind of punk. It's a transgressive, transgendered punk, you know? And like Lou Reed and Transformer and Velvet Underground. It's a more intellectual version. So it's very important for us. Which we mapped out her sort of record history, which is a really fun way to build a character. And it was very natural to Greta, and then I showed her lots of videos. There's these great videos of Susie Banshees on their 1980 tour, so it's a little late for me, but there's a lot of videos of tours she did then, and her dancing is so amazing. She's such an amazing dancer, and just her energy as a woman, you know, and just her sexuality and her way she presents herself, and she's like simultaneously rough and magical, and that was really helpful to Greta.
Listening to before your sister introduced you to punk?
Skateboarding and the scene of skateboarding introduced me to punk. And just simultaneously my sisters were into it. I'm a California kid, so they were turning me on to the LA hardcore scene, Black Flag, Adolescence, TSOL, Circle Jerks, that whole world.
Dark mornings fill the air. Some conform of the spread of parade of the horror balls. Parade of the horror balls. Parade of the horror.
My sisters taught me about Talking Heads, and once you get into Talking Heads, you have a different slice and a little bit more of the CBGB scene.
Yeah.
Patti Smith, Television, stuff like that.
Great record collection.
Yeah,
that's a great record collection right there.
Yeah.
About beginners as well, and the music in beginners, because again, it's a hugely important part of the film.
Yeah, I do use it to define characters. I did the same thing here. So this movie's like As Time Goes By meets Buzzcocks, and in Beginners, my dad listened to classical music all the time, and I found these Bach concertos that were converted to solo French horn. French horns is such a beautiful, kind of tragic, funerary sound to me. You know, it's like, it's like emotions incarnate, you know, because it's about my dad's dying. So it really just suited him to me. And then my mom would listen to... My mom's just a much more salt-of-the-earth person, always identified with the underdog, thought of herself as a huge civil rights person, very proud Jew, even though she was totally secular and barely Jewish, you know, but she really rode that horse. And she listened to The Sting, the soundtrack for The Sting all the time, which has all these piano rags, you know. And so I was investigating that, and then I got into Jelly Roll Morton, who's just amazing. And in America, you can get him. He's on the Library of Congress, so it's kind of like, I don't know what the equivalent is here. It's like the Victoria and Albert Museum or something.
Yeah, yeah.
It's very cheap. Like, it's $2,000 a pop, which is incredibly cheap in a movie, but it's like, you know, the history of jazz.
Wow.
Yeah, so Jelly Roll Morton came to represent my mom. She's decidedly, by choice, not as culturally fancy as my dad. She found him pretentious. So it's like Bach meets Jelly Roll Morton in that film.
Now you've got sweet jazz music. I don't have any name for it. Just a number that I just thought I'd play a while here, just to give a person a good idea. It's also one of my riffs, in what you call riffs, in the jazz, you know, in the slow tunes. I've seen this blundered up so many times, it has given me the heart failure. No, I haven't got a drum. That's my foot, if you happen to think of something like this.
Great way to describe your characters and the relationships, yeah, by using composers. It's,
yeah,
it's brilliant. I love the scene in Beginners where he's just been to a club and,
yeah, yeah,
and he calls up,
yeah,
Ian's character going, they played this music.
Yeah, yeah.
He's writing it down. Yeah. House music.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And Ian could do the beat thing.
Such a great, yeah, scene.
Oliver?
Yeah.
I'm not sorry I woke you.
I went to Akbar tonight.
You did?
Yeah, no, they had some wonderfully loud
music. What kind of music's that?
Probably house music. Yep.
House music. Okay.
So my dad came out and he entered like a gay scene at 75, and it was this beautiful revolution for him on multiple levels. The tell that my father was gay when he was a closeted straight man was that you'd find him occasionally at night with a scotch dancing by himself to Edith Piaf in his office.
Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien. Ni le bien qu'on m'a fait, ni le mal, tout ça m'est bien égal. Non, rien de rien. Non, je ne regrette rien, car ma vie. Ça commence avec toi.
And he's always into music, and when he came out, he got it really into Kenny G.
Wow.
Which he found really sexual, he would tell me. Like, it's hot music, it's sexy music, which is just the funniest interpretation.
Thank you.
Do you think working with, because you've worked with a number of bands on different projects and artists, do you think that has had any influence on how you use music within your feature filmmaking?
Well, I think it's more like I was in bands, like in high school. So mm-hmm. I started off, thought I was going to be a professional skateboarder. It didn't work out. This skating scene turned me on to the punk scene. I was in bands when I was like 14, 15. And I was hoping that was going
to
be my life. And
that's
I wasn't that good of a musician. You know, I just wasn't good enough. Music was sort of one of my first loves, really, and my first entry into like creativity. And like I said, I grew up in this family where, because my parents were born in the 20s and just the souls that they were, they didn't talk about their lives or their emotions. And Santa Barbara is like this impossibly sunny place where you're supposed to be happy. And I wasn't. And so I felt very alienated and very odd. And then I listened to The Damned or Gang of Four or Suzy or something, and it'd be like, oh, okay, there's other options. For The Cure, I remember that first Cure record, just in the dark, very loud. And it allowed me to feel a lot of things that I was feeling that I was denying, you know.
10:15 on a Saturday night. And the tap drips under the strip light. And I'm sitting in the kitchen sink. And the tap drips, drip, 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 drip.
So it's always been like very key to me. And then I've worked with a lot of bands and a lot of music videos. And music and film go together for so many reasons. They're both in time. I think that's the main reason. It's a time-based experience. Mm. And it's sort of, they're both kind of operate on a semi-unconscious level, you know?
Yeah.
So to me, it's all intertwined. And I often think of film musically. I think of it as verse, chorus, verse, chorus, or I think of it as the way songs can be slow and build or have these changes in energy. That will often influence me in a bigger passage of filmmaking.
Remember the films that had an impact on you where the music was?
Yeah, I remember like when I was in high school, I saw The Wall.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm.
Love that movie, but I did that, you know, and it really like walloped me. And in a similar way, it had a message that punk was having. You know, you're not alone being insane. You're not flawed and sick for feeling insane. This world is making you feel insane. And that's a great relief to hear.
Yeah.
I love the way Godard uses music, often as an interruption, often as very present, it's not melting into the background. and the way that Fellini uses music. Those movies I saw in college, like freshman year of college, I went to art school, so like, I don't know if it's here, same thing, like Friday night film club,
yeah,
you know, and it's free, and so you can go see all these things, and you're 18 years old, and like, those movies I saw then really did hit me, and I think those guys use music pretty strongly, so that always felt like natural to me, not even as a choice, just feel like, oh yes, that's how good movies are.
Beginners and 20th century women, and music is such an important part to both those films. It kind of defines the characters, really. Mm-hmm. Was that a conscious thing for you, or was it just the way that you have written your films and directed them?
Well, I definitely love music and all that, but no, it's super conscious, and it's a way to talk about history. Both these films are really meditations on how we construct ourselves and the culture we're in. And I'm dealing with characters that are with these really big generation gaps, because my parents were 40 when they had me and they were born in the 20s. They're both World War II vets. I was born in the 60s and I'm like a vet of nothing. And so me and my parents are separated so much by the worlds that we grew up in, and our loves and ideas of ourselves, our most secret thoughts, are interwoven with these big social norms and waves and things that are possible, impossible, you know. And I feel like those movies are talking about that. And music is similar to that. Emotions of a Rudy Valley song very much kind of describe the emotional wavelength of my parents. Everything's okay, you know.
Yeah.
And this is all cheery and this is great. And then, you know, Why Can't I Touch It by the Buzzcocks is perfect for me. Like, it all looks so real, it smells so real. Why can't I touch it? Which is a very 70s problem.
Play as time goes by.
Oh, I can't remember it myself. I'm a little rusty on it.
I'll hum it for you. Sing it, Sam.
You must remember this. A kiss is just a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh. The fundamental things apply as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say I love you. On that you can rely. Brains as time goes by.
Sam, I thought I told you never to play.
What was lovely about the film as well was it made me go back and explore the music from the films that are reference points for Dorothea, Annette's character, you know, mm-hmm. Casablanca, the Bogart films and things like that. And I don't know, it feels like it should be celebrated a little bit.
Yeah, I love all that music. The hardest song to get in our movie wasn't Bowie, it was As Time Goes by Rudy Valley, because it's part of the Casablanca estate. And then you got to go to Warner's archive, and they have a phone with no answering machine. And it's this older woman that protects all those old Warner films. Writing via fax, And
still has a fax machine?
Yeah, and you just get the sense that, you know, and there is a beautiful part of Warner Brothers. It's in Burbank, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Los Angeles actually does have history. It's not like history here, but it is a history. And that's its history. You know, like Casablanca was made right by the L.A. River and by In-N-Out Burger, you know. And I find that kind of fascinating. So that we got to get into, like, the heart of the weirdness that is Warner Brothers archive.
Yeah.
It was really fascinating to me. And we had to fight and fight and fight and fight for that song. And I was like, God, it's so key. And that's how the film ends, is as time goes by. And then the credits go, and then the Buzzcocks song comes up. And to me, it's like, okay, if you didn't get what the movie was about yet, like, hopefully hopefully that'll do it.
How did you resolve that? Begging and pleading?
Perseverance. Just keep going, because we don't have a lot of money, and we're not like a big deal, and they don't care. So it's just like, you gotta keep going, yeah.
Worth it.
Yeah, yeah.
So worth it.
Yeah.
Are you thinking about the next film yet?
I have some thoughts. So here's how I write. So lately I've been walking around listening to Frank Ocean's record, which I adore, and for its sort of ambient collaginess. So I'm gonna walk around Los Angeles where I live, listening to that, and like, there's just something about the space of that record. It's so contemporary feeling to me. And Los Angeles is so contemporary, such a modern city, such a blank, weird, not pretty, but very thick with the dilemmas and issues that are now to me. So I'm kind of I'm writing from the feeling I hope my film would have, which is sort of a Frank Ocean-y LA feeling.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the fuck the film is. but I have kind of like the feeling I think you would feel when you're watching the movie.
That's a good place to start.
We'll see. Yeah, yeah.
Mike, absolute pleasure to chat to you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
thank you.
And I can't wait for the next one.
Thanks. If it is more Nike. They're looking for a check. Tell them it ain't likely. Say she need a ring like Carmelo. You must be on that white like Othello. All you want is Nikes, but the real ones just like. Just like me.
From Frank Ocean's latest album, Blonde, that's Nikes, providing a tantalizing glimpse of the tone of Mike Mills' next film, whatever that may be. My huge thanks to Mike for taking the time to talk to us. 20th Century Women is on general release now, with the soundtrack, including parts of Roger Neill's score, available via Rhino Records. Both come highly recommended. Find out exactly what we played by heading to edithbowman.com, where you can also listen to every single episode of Soundtracking. You can subscribe there too, or at iTunes or Audioboom if you prefer. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We're at Soundtracking UK. And spread the word amongst your pals if you've enjoyed what you've heard. Next up is Ang Lee. Need I say more? I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.